Today, we have a very special guest with us. He's currently working on providing career counseling and test preparation coaching. And he's also leveraging technology to build products to help students. He has counseled over 10,000 students till date. We have with us Jimit Sir. He is the director of College Pond, a very renowned institute based out of Mumbai, which helps students with career counseling. Prior to this, Jimit Sir has worn multiple hats. Be it a math tutor, a production stage backend, a disaster relief volunteer, an IT analyst, a financial developer, a project manager, a key account manager, business partner, and a lot more. But today, in this podcast, he talks to us about how to select the right master's program, which country is currently best suited for you based on the course that you want to do, the climatic conditions, and the COVID situations as well. He talks to us about key metrics that one should look at when they're deciding on the university that they want to go to. And he also gives us knowledge about what would be the right time to pursue your master's degree. So let's deep dive into our conversation with Jimit Sir and know more about his journey. We are three friends who are talking and learning from interesting people working in various industries, sharing their stories and journey so far. These are your hosts, Hiloni Punadar,
Atit Kothari,
and Tapan Desai.
And this is What the Hat. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any episodes. So today we have with us Jimit Sir from College Pond. And let's deep dive into our conversations and learn from his journey so far.
Hi, Jimit Sir. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
I just want to take a moment to, you know, thank College Pond. Like, they've helped me and my wife. And Jimit Sir has played like an instrumental role in helping us navigate all the admission processes and selecting which program to pursue our higher studies in.
Pleasure.
Yeah, same with me. Like, Jimit Sir helped me during my master's application process. I think most of the DJ students will know Jimit Sir from College Pond for sure.
In fact, even the principal, Hari Vasudevan, he starts sending students to me. He thinks, you know, people want to go abroad, go to Jimit Sir. I met him a couple of times. Nice guy.
Oh, that's great. So, sir, how has things changed since you did your master's? Like, how has the application process changed? Maybe like the number of programs that the universities are now offering. And if you could also talk to us about the job opportunities.
Sure. I remember I did my master's in computer science when I didn't have a computer with me at that time. And I did my master's in computer science. So all the application process was like, you know, hard copies and couriering, figuring out where is the address, where to courier, how to courier, you know. In a way, Google was just new in India. We were just trying to learn to use Google with just like one computer in a family and everyone's fighting for internet connection. So everything was like, you know, you courier your documents, the LORs were couriered by everything, you sign it, stamp the envelopes, get things done. Okay, and we didn't have the resources to research, you know, you just say, you ask your seniors what you did and you just blindly follow them, right? So in a way, we didn't have a lot of choices. We were not spoiled for choices. Today, I think people are spoiled for choices. There is so much data out there that people are actually more confused. Okay, with so many decisions and so many things on social media. I think in a way, it's good for them that they have so many courses to look at. Okay, I mean, courses which were unheard of at during my time. You know, you could do niche programs like Masters in Real Estate Financial Planning. Okay, or master's in genetic counseling, you know, which things would people wouldn't have even heard of at that point of time. So it's good that people have the opportunities, but the only drawback now is with so much data out there. I see today, every year, the kind of students that come to me, I think they are more and more confused, unfortunately.
So like, how did you do your own research? Like, which college do you want to go to and like how the application process works? How did you do that?
It was like I told you, ask your seniors what to do. There was no internet. Half the websites of the universities were not working, right? So the university I applied to, they didn't even have a functioning website, but I ended up going there, right? So in today's world, people wouldn't do that. If you don't have a website that's working, I'm not going to go to your college. Okay. So you talk to your seniors, you know, you just try to figure out, talk to people. I did a lot of wrong applications, just blindly applying to like the Stanford and all without even having the caliber at that time. Okay. no one to guide us so much at that point of time. So it's a different world. But yeah, I mean, I remember I applied to like 10 colleges and all were top colleges, basically. I got like 8 rejects, you know. I mean, I was the topper of my class and I had no rejects in the entire, in DJ Sangvi. So it was a shocking thing. I had given up hopes of going abroad. I took up a job in placement and then I ended up getting like 1-2 admits and I just decided to fly out there. So it just, I think maybe just, you know, pieces fell into one another at the right time, I guess.
Yeah. So going back to like the analysis paralysis, right, for the students, like so many options out there. So how do you help them narrow it down? Do you have like a process?
No, we need to work with the students, right? You know, so some people want to apply to, yeah, should I apply to USA? Donald Trump factor is killing me. Should I go to Canada? My friends are going to Canada. So what we realized is there is no right answer. I had students who wanted, were dying to go to Canada. They quit their education and came back. They went to a University of Toronto, amongst the top names out there, quit their education and came back. And then we are asking them what happened. And they say, you know what, I cannot stay in minus 20 degrees for 6 months. Okay. So that's when we realized that, you know, there are so many things that, you know, people just assume or take it for granted. Like my wife couldn't stay in the New York cold. I mean, she hated it. Okay. And we just assume that, you know, you will survive out there. There are schools where you don't get vegan food at all. Okay. So we when we work with the student, what we do is we explain to them, these are the problems that you will face.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you need to take an informed decision on these lines. Okay. We will not take the decisions for them, but we make them aware of these are the problem areas you will face. Hey, I want to go to Canada for immigration, but are you okay with this? You want to go to Germany, but first try learning the German language. If you think you can't learn the German language, going to Germany does not make sense, right? You can go to USA, great, but if your end goal is immigration, don't look at USA. So what happens is the process has become more cumbersome, actually, because we need to spend a lot of time making students aware of so many opportunities out there. They are not even aware of what programs are out there, what countries to apply to. You know, if they listen to us, then they'll go and talk to someone else with a different viewpoint. They'll come back to us, sir, this is what I heard, you said something else. So the iterations have gone up. The amount of time that we spend per student is actually going up, because there is so much data out there and we need to make sure that they understand how to take decisions from that, you know, from too much information out there. So it's a challenging role for us as well, how to adapt to it.
Interesting. But in the recent times, like you said, you saw like students fluctuating between US, Canada. In the current times, including the COVID aspect coming into picture, one, do you see like a lot of students now preferring something like going for an abroad education, probably when some of their courses might still be remote? And second, which is the country that you now see is booming in terms of like a lot of students from India kind of preferring that over like probably a US or a Canada?
Okay. So one, what happened in fall 2020 was, unfortunately, you know, many people, I would say 60-70% people deferred. They did not want to pay so much for an online education. Maybe a free Coursera course can teach you that. You're paying for the exposure and the experience. Okay. Which, you know, I've been through it myself and I can completely relate to how it changes you as a person. Rather than doing your lectures at 2:30 to 4:30 in the night is not going to help you out when you're sleeping half of the time. So a lot of people have kind of deferred their plans by a year. I see a lot of students change their colleges. This college has online lectures. This college has on-campus lectures. I don't mind going to this college because it is on-campus classes. So if the colleges do not start with on-campus classes, they will have to shut down. So that's, you know, the colleges will have to adapt, number one. Number two, in terms of countries that are in demand. So Canada has always been in demand, but the people have realized that getting into Canada is very difficult. They only look at academic scores. Your kids are poor, sorry, you will not get it. They don't look at anything like USA. Most of them look at a holistic picture. Our kids are poor, GRE is great, no problem. Both are poor, your work experience, maybe your paper publications, you can still get in. Okay. So again, a lot of people from tier 2, tier 3 cities have decided to go abroad. A lot of people who cannot afford money have decided to go abroad because they think, hey, if I go to Germany, the education is free. Okay. So I will learn the German language and go there. I have a student who recently enrolled with us for MBA. He wants to do MBA from Estonia. Okay. So many of you might have to go on Google Maps to figure out where is Estonia. Okay. And, you know, I talking to him, why Estonia? He said, I can do my MBA in 5 lakh rupees, you know, which is more expensive. It's cheaper than India, actually. So why not just go and do that and take the risk? So sometimes I learn from my students and, you know, we are doing research on Estonia and hopefully we'll be sending our first student to Estonia next year. Okay. So like I said, it's global. The country you go to also depends on the field you are from. You're a mechanical automobile guy, you want to go to Germany or UK. You are into pharmacy, maybe you want to go to Ireland. So again, we look at for your field, where is the scope? Luxury brand management, you want to go to France. Hospitality, food industry, you want to go to Switzerland. So we work with the students and explain to them, these are the countries you need to target depending on your requirement, your budget, your immigration plans, the companies you want to work for. Sometimes most of the students apply to multiple countries and they wait for the admits to come and then take a call where to go depending on, hey, I got a best college in this country and an okayish college in this country, maybe I'll go there.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple of students who let go of Stanford to go to other colleges because they got 100% scholarship in other colleges.
Mm.
Okay, so it's all across the place. There is no one solution that fits all because every student is unique and they all have their own, their pros, their uniqueness that we need to figure out and help them in achieving their career path.
Awesome. Just out of curiosity, sir, like out of these students whom you kind of work towards sending abroad, how much percentage of students make this decision also based on the job opportunities they're going to get in that country versus getting that learning and coming back to India and kind of applying it here?
So, you know, many of my students ask me to connect to ex-students to talk to them, you know, about the college course. And most of my ex-students tell me that the only thing the students want to know is what is the job opportunity. No one cares about what is the education over here and what are the good courses. The first question there is, will I get a job or not? You know, unfortunately, the mindset of the students need to change. Most of them are, you know, they land in USA in August and September is, you know, I want to start applying for jobs when there is nothing on your resume to talk about. I usually tell them, don't start applying for jobs in the first semester, start from second semester. But I think the peer pressure is so much, unfortunately, that, you know, I mean, you know, it's like this. I have a 2-year-old daughter whom I tell her, don't do this, she will do the opposite. So I've realized that, you know, kids are not going to listen to their peer, their elders and their superiors, they're only gonna listen to their friends. So you tell them once, you tell them the second time, they'll say, Bhashan de rahe, so I stopped giving my knowledge and Bhashan to them. They will do what their peers tell them to do, which is as simple as that, you know. I've learned it the hard way. So if I tell someone you will not get into CMU, they will not believe me. If Atit will tell them that you will not get in here, they will believe Atit. That's what's gonna happen to them. Okay, so that's one thing. So like I said, you know, it's there is too much data out there, you know, it's completely different and people are saying, hey, you know what, my friend got in with 305 GRE, I have a 310 GRE, why will I not get in? Okay, they just look at the marks and compare and they don't want to understand, hey, you know what, you want to go to an MIT, you need to understand the average age is 27 years. You are a 21 year old, it does not make sense applying to this college. You know, these are some things that at that time, maybe the students don't understand because, you know, 21, 22 is the age when they think that they can do anything in the world. Okay, nothing is impossible. I remember I had a student who had like a very bad marks in GRE, you know, like maybe a 10, 15 percentile. He said, I want to apply to a Cornell. I said, are you out of your mind? And he's telling me nothing is impossible in the world, right? And I had no idea to, I mean, no counter answer I could give him. I said, you know what, let's go ahead and apply. You know, I mean, let's believe in miracles. That's what we'll do. Okay, so I get all kinds of people, you know, sometimes I learn from my students. There are sometimes I can't even argue with them. Okay, so it's a learning curve for me. People coming in telling me, I want to make a nuclear bomb. Which country should I go and study? You know, and I'm clueless. Okay. So sometimes, you know, I actually have a research team and we need to start figuring out, okay, what do I tell this guy? I had a guy who came and told me, I want to make a machine gun. Now help me make a career path. How to make a machine gun? Okay, and I'm figuring out, you know, it's going to be difficult because no government will recruit an international student in a defense department, right? So the best option would be study, come back to India and apply to a DRDO in India. And that's how you try to make your way through things, right? So sometimes, you know, we come across unique cases. So we have to spend research doing that and then get back to the students. So it's interesting. It keeps you on your toes. With so many things happening, you know, people are, I have parents and students fighting in front of me. The student has gotten into a Columbia and a Georgia Tech and the father is saying, I don't want you to go to USA because Donald Trump is changing policies every day. You are not going to USA. And the child is like, I want to go to USA. And I have family fights happening in front of me. You know, so it's you know, there's a lot of differences of opinion even within a family. Our kids telling me I want to go and parents saying I don't want you to go because what if you will get COVID-19 when you are abroad? So there are fights happening in the family now, you know, so it's something that we have to try to resolve now.
Just to like circle back to sir before like you sending so many students abroad and getting into this whole career path, you have yourself had a very diverse journey from like production to teaching as a math tutor to being into the IT space, doing your own masters and then finally being part of College Pond. Like you'd want to know a little more about how did you map up on so much diversity and what like you started with teaching and what brought you back to like helping students again?
So, you know, I'm a kind of, you know, I try to go with the flow, you know, I mean, I don't want to, I agree that I'm a planned person, but sometimes, you know, you just flow with life, you get an opportunity, you move on, you know, that's what I think it is, right? So some things just happen to fall in place. You know, I got a good job, you know, I switched my job at the right time. You know, I got an opportunity to work on a project and I had to go out of my comfort zone. You know, I just took the risk. So sometimes I was pulled into projects which I didn't want to do and I ended up excelling over there. You know, deciding to come back to India was, you know, again, during the recession time in 2008-09 time when I got married and my wife was a dependent in USA, you know, sitting at home the whole day. You know, it's not right. It was not right for her career at that point of time. So we thought, you know, let's just take the risk. You know, I mean, because, you know, I didn't want to get into the analysis paralysis mode, right? I take a decision. This is the date by which I have to take a decision. Then right to right, wrong to wrong. You have to take a decision and move on with life. Okay, don't get stuck up into that in-between zone. Okay, so we just came back. It just happened. You know, I was just dilling-dallying around over here. I used to guide a lot of students who used to come to USA at that point of time. And, you know, it was more of a hobby for me when I started doing it in India, just guiding students. Are teaching GRE, GMAT over the weekends. And it was a hobby actually. And then what gradually happened was that I was actually spending more time in my hobby than my professional work. Then what happened was the hobby became my professional work. And after 1-2 years, I decided that, you know, let's make it a full-time thing because, you know, students are benefiting. I'm able to make a good impact on their lives, you know, careers of their lives. It's not just the student's career, but also the entire family as a whole, right? Many parents are mortgaging their houses to pay for the child's education. And what if they don't get a job? The house is mortgaged. You know, the entire life of a family can change. It's very crucial decisions that you are taking. And I thought, you know, I'm making an impact on the lives of people. I'm enjoying what I'm doing and I'm good in it, you know, so it just kind of clicked maybe and, you know, it just worked out and, you know, I think I'm doing a good job, I guess. And the other things that I used to do, you know, like dealing in the stock markets and all, you know, now that's become a hobby right now, actually. So life sometimes now, you know, after a stage, you are not in it just for the money. You are in it for your satisfaction or doing something or finding your true calling, basically.
How did you like start working with College Pond and like what was like it like in initial years, like how was that going?
So the initial years, so basically what happened was College Pond was actually started by Suraj couple of years ago. Okay, then he stopped it, he moved to Dubai, you know, so I was in touch with him. He came to India from Dubai, I came to India from USA. We kind of met, we thought let's start again, you know. And even he used to guide students. In fact, he guided me also when I went abroad for my studies. Okay. So, you know, we just kind of, like I said, he had his own work, I had my own work, and we were just doing it like, you know, maybe once or twice a week kind of a thing, right, you know. So we just started off doing this twice a week, then it became thrice a week, five times a week. And then we realized this has to be, you know, either we need to take a decision, we go all in it, or, you know, we can't sustain that. But there were years when we used to stop taking in students, you know, when we were doing it as a hobby. You know, we have 100, 200 students stopped. We are not taking any more students. We were sending back students, actually. Now we go back and think through it. A lot of our competition started because of that, I guess, you know. So our competitors should be thankful to us.
I think, sir, your career seems like really rewarding. Like, you see immediate reward to your actions. And I think that kind of impact that you, I mean, a lot of our projects have a much long-term impact, but yours is like right there. If a student gets into a university, I mean, that's where you see that joy that you've made a difference to his life.
No, I agree to that. I mean, and, you know, I know that, you know, there are many students who keep in touch with us. Hey, I got a job in Apple. I got a $200,000 starting salary. You know, it makes us happy to hear that. And many of our students are still in touch with us. So that's a good thing. I would say maybe 20% of our students are still in touch with us. You know, so we do have a long-term relationship with many students. Some of them, you know, everyone becomes busy on their own in their lives. And, you know, you touch base maybe through a LinkedIn or a Facebook. Happy birthdays. Then how we keep in touch with one another.
Awesome. So what does your day-to-day look like these days?
It's crazy. I mean, like I said, I would meet at least about 50 students a day. I would say 30 to 50 students a day. So my family members tell me, it's like, you know, I'm a doctor where, you know, you people are sitting outside waiting to see you, and, you know, you call the next patient inside. So it's a busy day for me usually, you know, and it's a seasonal business right now. If you guys have studied in India, so you know how the Indian mentality is, you wake up just before the deadline. So that's what happens, unfortunately, that, you know, everyone wakes up last minute. So it's a seasonal business when there are deadlines. You know, I remember 3 years ago, I actually had to pull an all-nighter. I slept at 7 o'clock in the morning, right? And, you know, so it was kind of difficult now to do that. But, you know, I had to do it because everyone's waking up at the last minute. So we try to streamline processes and make things more strict now and not giving in to students. You wake up last minute, sorry. So we also try to, you know, leverage technology, and we, you know, just block their accounts and say, sorry, you know, we'll move on after some deadline. So, you know, so we are trying to be a little bit strict about it. Let them learn that, you know, time is important before they go to USA or any other country abroad for that matter. So like I said, every day is different. I would say that, you know, 20-30% of the time will go dealing with the staff assigning work. Maybe 20-30% of the time will go in taking business development decisions, you know, what next to be done, how to grow, recruitment, looking out, you know, researching other countries, what's happening. We need to keep updated on what's happening. Whenever Trump says something, the students bombard us, what's going to be an impact now. So we need to hold, you know, webinars explaining the impact to students, or, you know, okay, UK has opened up the work permit. What is the impact going to be? So we do like, I mean, we have accounts on Zoom, Webinar Jam, this, that, everything is booked, right? So we need to plan in advance when can I schedule the next webinar, right? So it's busy, you know, I mean, we are growing, so it's kind of fun, but life is very hectic. Luckily, I have a wife who's, you know, taking care of the kids, so luckily I can devote more time to my work.
So you talked about last minute students and who come in and like ask you for help. And like, even I did not think about GRE TOEFL until my third year or something. So like, do you have any advice for students who are in their first year, second year, who are just starting with engineering and they're building their profile and resume? Like, what should they focus on if they plan on going abroad, like after completing their engineering?
Right. So what has happened today is, if you are looking at countries like Canada, Netherlands, Sweden, and Germany, you know, these countries only look at academic scores. They don't care whether you have paper publications or, you know, or you have patents or work experience, because their competition is so high. The university will also have to filter people. Just like in India, when you're giving the IIMs and the IITs, you are less than 99 percentile, you are filtered out because of the too much the volumes, right? You can't blame the universities for that as well. So people, you know, who just take it for granted, hey, I don't want to go abroad. They graduate, start working in India, and then realize, now I want to go abroad. And then they realize, hey, you know what? My academics are poor. I did not do this. I did not give the GRE when I was in college. And now when I'm working 9 to 9, I cannot study for the GRE or the GMAT. So, you know, it's important that one thing is don't keep your CADs for taken for granted, because it's becoming a more competitive world. I remember when during my time, like 17, 18 years ago, I would say only maybe 10, 20% of a class used to go abroad. Today, 70, 80% of the population go abroad. You know, I mean, from my college, I'm just talking from my college. Again, the numbers are always going to go up. So the competition is high. So academic plays an important role, number one. Number two, what is happening is people don't ask the right questions to their seniors, right? So let's say you said you gave your GRE in the third year. Now, when I tell my students, give your GRE in the second year, what they do is they ask their seniors, when did you give the GRE? The seniors say third year. So they give it in third year. In fact, the right question to ask your senior is not when did you give your GRE, but when do you think should I give the GRE? The problem is they are not asking the right questions. Okay, it's important to have a right mentor who can guide you. When I tell them give the GRE in the second year, they're like, you know what, we have enough time, we'll give it later on. But you need to understand the reason I say give it early is, you know, there are statistics to back that more than 60% Indians retake the GRE. What if you have a bad day? What's your plan B? Today you are not ready with a plan B. Okay. So they don't understand that your GRE and academics has a higher role to play than, you know, maybe taking part in social service activities. Okay, so they need to understand these things. But what happens is kind of it's all peer pressure that happens today. You know, when a student wants to book the GRE exam, he will not book it alone. All the group of friends will book the exam together. I'm sure you guys would have done the same thing. You can ask this question to yourself also, right? So it's like, you know, you want to find the leader of the group, okay, and you convince that person, you book a date and let your friends follow you. Okay, so it's the peer pressure today. That's what's happening. You know, I have a group of people coming together. Hey, we all want to go to Canada. Why Canada? Okay, all of us are together. 20 people coming, joining me together. We all want to go to Canada. I think it's become a herd mentality, unfortunately. You know, it's unfortunate, the peer pressure, what's happening. The students are confused. There is so much of data out there. They need to stick to one person or at least two people and say, you know what? I think I trust this guy, and then you leave it to him. You know, it's like you trust a doctor. You don't want to go home and start Googling what medicines is giving, because if you Google the side effect of any medicine, all the medicines will have 100 of side effects written down, right? So you'll actually have to trust a doctor on that one. That's how it is, right? I'm not saying you blindly trust us, but at least, you know, when you are asking 10 different people for 10 opinions, yeah. My friends are saying, don't go to USA, there are no jobs. My friends are saying there are no jobs in Australia. So that is what is happening today. And, you know, the peer pressure is kind of what is, unfortunately, I tell my students, don't get bogged by peer pressure. I have students who come and tell me that I got a bad score. Please don't tell my friends about it. I've given a wrong score to them. Please don't tell my parents about my score. I've given a wrong score to them. So there's a lot of peer pressure happening. Coming to that, what we realized is this has happened a few years ago. I had a student of mine who unfortunately committed suicide in CMU. I had another two students who attempted suicide in two different colleges. So that's when we realized that, you know, I think the peer pressure, the, you know, many people are not ready to go abroad. I have students who can't even talk in English and say, we want to go abroad. The first thing I tell them is learn to talk in English and then come to me. I'm not sending you abroad. And then, you know, I had a guy who actually told me I'm already in USA. I joined another counselor and I'm in USA. I said, good for you. Okay, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't take a student who I think is not fit to go abroad and then, you know, go there, not get a job and do things like that. So I wouldn't do that. So if there have been times where I've told my students bluntly on the face, you are not capable of going abroad, maybe work for a year or two. I've told bluntly the parents on their faces at times. I've had kids breaking down and parents breaking down in front of me, but I would rather play the bad cop and be blunt to them, you know, which many people don't appreciate, unfortunately. Having said that, even in the GRE classes, the amount of pressure I've seen people go through, getting 320 in the mock exam and 290 in the actual exam, we actually had counselors come and talk. One GRE lecture is dedicated by a counselor to come and talk about getting rid of the phobia for the exam. And when we say it's a lecture by a counselor, the students do mass bunking. So unfortunately, what we say is it's a statistics class. Once the students are in the class, we call the counselor and say, we are changing the lecture. So sometimes we have to lie to the students, you know, we have to play the same game that the students play with us. So we are trying on those ends. Then before they go to USA, we try to, or any other country, we try to do a pre-departure where we explain to them that, you know what, not everyone will get an internship. There is going, don't get into the rat race. You work hard. I mean, we put in the words, I don't know how many goes into the ears of the students, but we try our best to guide them.
So sir, like in your opinion, what is like an ideal time when someone should actually pursue their master degree or their MBA degree? Like, should it be after some years of work experience in India, or is it better to directly deep dive after their engineering? Like, we have had a lot of guests and a lot of mixed opinions out there.
It depends on the field you are going. If you're going into something like a marketing or psychology or HR, work experience makes a huge difference. In fact, if you're going in physiotherapy, some universities have written on the website, you need 300 hours of observership or articleship before you start your master's degree. So it does make sense. For MBA, minimum 3 years of experience is what my recommendation would be. Again, so some people are sure what they want to do. Sometimes it's a very technical field. It's okay to go as a fresher as long as you think you are competent enough or you built your career on those lines. We had a lot of people doing branch change. I've had architects going into data science. I've got pharmacy people going into data analytics. So when you are making such a drastic change at that time, you know, I recommend students that, hey, why don't you take a year off, test some waters before you jump into it. There is a branch change, unless you are extremely sure. So we get all kinds of people. Some people are sure what they want to do. You know, sometimes, you know, companies in India recruit with a 2 year of a bond and, you know, it's they don't want to get into it. A lot of parents actually have this psychology ke padhai jaldi khatam karte. Let's get the education done and dusted with. Okay. So, you know, many parents have this mentality and not the children, and it actually ends up going into the children's psyche. There are many people, you know, there are times when parents are not educated. Not all parents are educated. And they come and say, you know, 4-5 saal mein shaadi karna hai, kyun job karo, ye karo, wo karo. You know, there are some castes, you know, which I can't openly name it on record. But, you know, there are people say that you want the kids to get married immediately. I remember I had a girl who said, I want to do a PhD. And the father, you know, they're talking and I realized that, you know, there's going to be a problem in the family. So I was clear, a PhD will take 5 years. And the father said, absolutely not. You have to get married in 3 years. So you're not doing a PhD. Just do a master's and get done with it. Right. So we have, you know, all kinds of people, you know, the families having different opinions, you know, different cultures, traditions. So it's usually a family decision, right? Even to go in COVID or not to go in COVID is usually parents' decision more than students' decision, actually. Right. So there is no right answer to it. Okay. So it's something you deal it on a case by case basis.
Awesome. So what's next for you personally and for College Bond?
I don't know. So what we are doing is we are trying to do a lot of things on the app. We do ex-student videos, you know, where we connect students on the app. So we also try to, you know, you have to move on leverage technology. So our students can do everything on the app, talk to the counselors, you know, look at data, look at past students' resumes or essays, get details of the college, look at ex-students' data. So, you know, everything's gonna be on the app. And our students are constantly, you know, chatting with one another. We are making groups. They're talking to one another. So we are doing online. We are trying to get ex-students' data. So students have the data in front of them that can help them take an informed decision whether with my marks can I get into this college or not. Okay. So like I said, we are growing. We sent people to 17 countries last year across 37 domains. Okay. From engineering, psychology, counseling, physiotherapy. So we are also learning. We are growing, you know. Things are changing, you know, like I said, you need a lot of one-on-one time you need to spend with the students. Again, we had to make all our coaching classes online, GRE, GMAT, SAT, TOEFL, IELTS, because of the pandemic. So maybe in a way it got us a chance to, you know, be tech savvy and start doing everything online and, you know, maybe we use the time more productively. So, you know, we have been doing things on those front. We are also working on how do we make things better for students. So we are trying to be a one-place stop for everything. You want to take a loan, you want to get your flight tickets, you want to get your foreign currency, immunization. So we tied up with a lot of vendors when, because of the numbers we have, we can do bulk negotiation. So, you know, the students get everything under one umbrella. So, you know, that's what we are trying to do. trying to integrate with a lot of things to help them, you know, in their end-to-end journey.
Yeah, I think that is a lot of value add for the students. Like, you just go there, you don't have to deal with 10 people. I just deal with, you know, if I buy a whole bundle with College Pond, it's a much better experience, much seamless.
That's right.
So we move on to our next segment. That's our top three. And we're going to get some fun recommendations from Jimit, sir. The first one to start with would be the top three books that you would recommend, sir. And which is one book that you give the most?
I would say Fountainhead by Ayn Rand is something, you know, I mean, I read it maybe once a year. Every year as you mature, you get a different viewpoint on life. Okay. That's one book. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. I've read all books in one go every, I mean, whenever the new books launch, I would have it on the first day and just complete it in that night. So, you know, J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter books or something. I'm even a fan of all the Jason Bourne books have been read by me, you know, so that's also something. And at an intellectual level, you know, You Can Win by Shiv Khera is a good book, which is, you know, you see a lot of self-help books out there, but, you know, you would rather have a book which gives you, rather than tell you what to do, puts in some nice examples in front of you that you read and, you know, that motivate you rather than just tell you, do this. So these are some of the books that, you know, are kind of something that I would don't mind reading again and again.
Do you have recommendations on movies, TV shows?
For movies, I would say that, you know, I mean, I enjoy all genres of movies, but my all-time favorite would be, say, Sholay, Minority Report, Matrix, and Three Idiots are the four movies that I really love the most.
Awesome. I think that brings us to the end of our podcast. This has overall been a great session, sir, and thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
So that's about it, folks. We will be back next week with another guest and another story. We would love to hear your thoughts about the episode. Feel free to reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. You can just search What The Had Podcast. Also, subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Castbox, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcast from, so you never miss out on the next episode. This is Hiloni, Atit, and Tapan. Signing off, and this was What We Had.